is first up. Every morning, come and hang on first up. The only show that brings the bang. It's first up.
You're listening to First Up on TSN 1050.
This is First Up.
You ain't first, you're last.
8:03 here on First Up, a Tuesday morning. Welcome in. I'm Aaron Korolnik. He's Carlo Koliakovo. We have Dave Festruck from the Toronto Star joining us in about 15 minutes. Cam Jansen with his regular Tuesday appearance in about 45. Man, no shortage of topics with Cam around the NHL. Coaching changes, suspensions, fights. It's been a crazy couple of days in the National Hockey League, and a lot of which has been centered around the Toronto Maple Leafs. You think back to the game against the Winnipeg Jets on Sunday night, a game where the Leafs were down 5-1. I mean, it looked like it was completely out of control as far as the score, but it actually turned out to be a very intriguing finish because there were fights, there were victory celebrations by Logan Stanley after the Jets were able to defeat the Leafs in what was for them, their Super Bowl or their Stanley Cup final. It was quite an exuberant set of celebrations by the Winnipeg Jets. But, I mean, we know everything that happened. Neil Pionk, the defenseman for the Winnipeg Jets, a knee-on-knee collision with Rasmus Sandin. Pionk receiving a 2-game suspension yesterday. And I think we both agree, Coco, that was an appropriate suspension. Maybe, yeah. Especially considering there was no punishment in the game. And I think we would probably both agree with this as well. Perhaps if anybody deserves punishment from that game, it might be the referees for just for performing so poorly.
Yeah, I mean, look, I thought, you know, yesterday we thought that, you know, 2 games would probably be the appropriate discipline for Pionk, the league. Thought the same way. They handed out the suspension to him yesterday, and I think the curious thing right now is, you know, the fact that Jason Spezza got a in-person hearing means that the league or Department of Player Safety has the right or the choice to choose to suspend him for at least 5 games or more. I don't see that as a 5-game suspension. The act that he made, obviously. People want to call it predatory. People want to call it wrong, and it was. At the end of the day, it was. But I think that the fact that Pionk actually injures a person probably should have warranted more of a suspension. But we'll see how the league handles it this morning. It's, you know, he doesn't have a history of being a dirty player. It's clearly the emotions of that game. And the emotions that the referees let get out of hand because of the lack of control that they took over in that game have now, you know, put these scenarios in place. And you said it, he won't be available tonight. We don't know the status of Mitch Marner. Rasmus Sandin won't be available. So now, look, you're talking about adversity that the Maple Leafs are going to be facing. You know, first time all year, as good as things have been. And this is why it was, you know, it is important to start off as well as you did because, you know, in situations like this, when you're dealing with this, yes, you're still trying to get results, but if you don't, at least you know you've banked points. And so now the Maple Leafs have to make some roster decisions. And I'm curious that because Jason Spezza won't be available tonight, we don't know the availability of Mitch Marner. I wonder if one Josh Hosang will get a recall from the Toronto Maple Leafs today. Because look, if Marner's not available, you need a guy to play in the top six, need a guy to play the power play with no Spezza. And Josh Hosang has been lighting it up in the minors right now. And I think there's anybody right now that deserves a recall and a chance to play in the NHL. It's him. So I wonder if some point this morning we will actually see that transaction from the Maple Leafs. And look, now they're down to 6 defensemen, right? And remember at the beginning of the year, I said that if Timothy Liljegren is the Maple Leafs' 7th defenseman this year, they're going to be in big trouble. And this wasn't because I was taking a shot at Timothy Liljegren. Timothy Liljegren has no NHL experience, and he has played well so far in his play, but I don't see him as more than a bottom pair defenseman. And you just lost, right now, your second PPQB, and the guy that has been the most impressive and probably the most consistent player on your blue line in Rasmus Sandin, how are you going to replace that? Okay, you're going to let Travis Dermott and Timothy Liljegren fill out that bottom pair. But what do you do after that? Who's the next guy you're calling up? Is it Biega? Is it what's the guy's name from that came from the Sioux? I'm drawing a blank right now. Hollowell? Mac Hollowell? I mean, I don't know. Is it Rubens? Is it
you're going through the Marlies roster here?
Right.
I mean, yeah.
So, oh,
but what you said early on in the season or before the season about Liljegren was not an indictment on him in particular,
no.
Right? It was about the depth or
depth
lack thereof
of the organization.
In the organization. So now the Leafs are going to be without Rasmus Sandin for 2 to 3 weeks, and I think ultimately they're very fortunate that that's the case because that was a dirty play from Pionk, and it was a very dangerous one. I mean, how many times have we seen knee-on-knee collisions that result in far more serious injuries than a 2 to 3 week absence that ultimately Sandin will have? So I think that's
very
good news.
At least got lucky on that.
The Leafs definitely got lucky, but now they just got to hope they don't suffer another injury on the blue line.
Right.
Because, you know, you lose another guy in the top six. Now you're talking about one of the aforementioned dudes from the Marlies that very few people have heard of or have seen play. So that's important, and I love that Hosang idea, especially considering, listen, Spezza was replacing Marner on PP1. Right now, if both are out, I don't really know how they would approach it. Maybe Wayne Simmonds goes up there. Maybe Nick Ritchie goes up there. I don't know. But the power play has been humming for the Leafs in the last maybe 10, 15 games. And clearly that's been a very important part of them winning so many games in the last month. So however this plays out, you hope Marner's back in because that would obviously represent a significant important position for the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's one of their best players. He's missed the last two games after that kind of awkward incident with Jake Muzzin in practice. No one really is talking about what happened, but probably just a tweak. Like I saw this was deemed precautionary for Mitch Marner. I don't think
careful. They were being careful.
Yeah. And listen, this is a long season. I don't know. Maybe Marner tweaked a groin or a hamstring or something. I don't really know exactly. That's just my speculation. But whether he's back in or not, I still think a very winnable game for the Toronto Maple Leafs because they have the best player between these two teams. They have the best players. One, Jack Campbell, the goaltender, has just been absolutely outstanding, and he's rested after the game in Minnesota on Saturday night, so he's had a couple days to rest and recalibrate. And Austin Matthews has been on a ridiculous streak. If he scores tonight, that would be 7 games in a row for a goal, with a goal for Austin Matthews. His career long is 8 in a row, which he set in January, February, earlier this year, so I mean, are you going to bet against Austin Matthews to score tonight? I mean, obviously not. This guy, his goal against the Jets is, I think in different circumstances, had, you know, the whole gong show, as Matthews termed it, not happened. That was a disgusting snipe from Austin Matthews. Like, top corner. Very few players in the history of the National Hockey League could fire a puck with the velocity and accuracy with which Austin Matthews did on Connor Hellebuck on Sunday night, and that was the 5-2 goal. Andre Cashin scored to make it 5-3, and ultimately the Leafs lose 6-3, but Matthews is as hot as anybody in the league right now, and I don't know if I told you about the bet that Duffy and I made. He texted me on Sunday. He's like, what are the odds on Matthews to win the Rocket?
Yeah, you did
and
share that.
It was +700, or I think 8-1, and yeah, Duffy and I both hit that. That's our package deal. JD and I are in.
Is that going to pay for your golf membership next year?
Not quite, but it could go a sizable portion of it anyways.
Nice.
One of Duffy's 3 golf memberships. My guess is that his salary could probably cover most of his golf memberships to begin with.
Yeah,
but the Matthews winning the Rocket will be able to, you know, take a chunk out of that. I guess Dreisaitl is at 21 goals. Ovechkin is at 20 and Matthews is at 15. Probably he'll be at 17 or 18 after tonight, the way he's been rolling. And you look at the other side, Columbus. I think a lot of people have been impressed with what they've seen from Columbus this year, and rightfully so. This was a team with very low expectations, a new coach, and Brad Larson, a guy who not a lot of people knew about. But, I mean, I think you have to be pretty impressed. I mean, they made a big deal swapping Atkinson for Voracek, and they're a tough team to play against. We know Columbus. Werenski's a stud down there. Seth Jones is gone. Going back to the series that the Leafs played against the Blue Jackets, where Seth Jones was just an absolute monster for them, and now he's in Chicago, of course. But I don't think this is a gimme for the Leafs, in spite of you look at the betting line on this game, the Leafs are massive favorites. And if Marner's out and Spets is out and Sandin's out, I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah. No, it's They've got their work cut out for them too. You know, look, coming off a road trip, it's going to be their third game in four nights. You talked about some of the adversity that they're dealing with injuries. Don't take this Columbus team very lightly. This Columbus team works hard. They've got that same MO as, you know, John Tortorella instilled in this team under Brad Larsen. They really pride themselves in competing and in work ethic. And you know, who would have thought that they would have won the trade between Cam Atkinson and Jacob Voracek in the offseason? I think to a lot of people's surprise, that trade really caught people off guard considering it was one for one. And you heard that Philly was just trying to salary dump Voracek, but clearly this is a place he's very comfortable in because he played there in his early career. And
your boy.
Jakey.
You love Jake. Not,
oh,
he's a beauty, that guy. He's awesome.
He's the real life gritty is what he is.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, he's helping lead this young, exciting, optimistic Columbus Blue Jackets team that most people look at and say they don't have much talent. But I think they've done a good job retooling instead of completely rebuilding right now. And they got great goaltending. They got Merzlikins in net. They got Korpisalo. They got a good 1-2 tandem. The Leafs better be ready to bring their A game tonight. And if not, it's not their A game, their B-plus game, because Columbus is going to give them everything that and more, you know, for them to walk out with a victory. But look, I'll say it again. I'll even tweet it out. I think tonight's the perfect example right now, or perfect time, to call up Josh Hosang.
I love it. Please. If Marner's out, I think if Marner's out, then yeah, I would agree. If Marner's not out, yeah, I mean, I guess you could slot him in where Spezza was playing on the fourth line with Simmons and Richie. I don't know. Perhaps.
Who?
Hosang.
You're not putting him on the fourth line if you call him.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So yeah. If Marner's in, then I don't know if it necessarily makes sense. But if Marner is out, I love the idea. Give him a shot. He's been great, and he played great in camp, played great in the preseason, has been awesome with the Marlies so far, scoring some beautiful goals. Mm-hmm. And the Leafs are going to need a little bit of an offensive boost because, I mean, clearly Marner, a stud in that respect. But Spezza, in lieu of Marner's absence, at least on Saturday night, was awesome. I mean, two goals and one of the prettiest passes you'll see to Austin Matthews to score the third goal for the Leafs that ultimately tied that game up and got him to OT in a shootout loss, unfortunately for the Leafs. But we know Spezza, and we'll find out probably in the afternoon just how long he's going to be suspended for, and it could be as many as five games, if not more, based on the in-person hearing, and I think both of us would be surprised.
Apparently his hearing's
five.
At 1 o'clock today, so yeah. We won't find out till at least probably before game time.
You ever been in a hearing before?
Never.
For suspension?
No, I've never been in a hearing before, but I remember when Jordan Tutu took a run at me behind the net and almost literally decapitated me with the way he hit me. They suspended him for the hit, and I remember the next day I was on the phone with Colin Campbell because he was calling me to check in on how I felt and stuff like that. And I said, look, man,
I'm so concussed.
No, I don't feel good right now, but clearly there was an intent there. And, you know, they thought the same thing, and I think they suspended him two or three games and stuff like that. But, no, I've never been involved in a hearing. I'm a lover, man. I'm not a fighter. Come on. I know how to play within the rules.
I did see, I think it was Kevin Gibson, the TSN research specialist, who tweeted out yesterday that Spezza's last Gordie Howe hat trick was in, like, 2005, where he scored a goal.
He fought me.
And had an assist, and he fought you, which is, I would encourage our audience, and we'll tweet it out on the First Up 1050 account. Your fight with Spezza is so good. You guys are both so pissed off.
He jumped me.
I know. And he was livid, Spezza. He was with Ottawa at the time. You were with the Leafs.
He thought I speared him at center ice. Yeah.
You guys are boys. I mean, you guys know each other.
And if you look at
the
video, maybe you can have an argument that maybe I tried to spear him, but all I was trying to do was hold my stick out to keep my gap with him, and I guess he thought that I speared him, and I'm playing a two-on-two in the zone. All of a sudden, I see fists just thrown at me, and I look over, it's Jason Spezza. I'm like, what are you doing, man? I was pissed. Yeah. Belfort came to my aid, and he tried to jump in on it, and I was telling the referees to get out of my way, and I wanted at him, man. I wanted
I will at him. Say. Listen, you say you're a lover, not a fighter. Completely agree, you know, both on and off the ice. But any fight you're in, you hold your own. Like, you are, you, like, have beat the crap out of a lot of guys. You
Yeah.
search Carlo Colaiacovo fights, you might be undefeated. You're like Floyd Mayweather out there.
Yeah. I boast a pretty good record. And
you do.
Look, I was never one of those guys that went out and looked for a fight, but I was an angry fighter. Like, I needed to get really angry to fight. And when I put myself in that situation, I didn't really hold back. And you know, did I get lucky? Probably. But did I pick my spots? Probably. But look, I'll still say it today. If I get really, really angry, I feel confident in any situation that I put myself in.
All right. Well, I imagine last night may have stirred up some anger in Mr. Colaiacovo after everything
we
saw.
If me and Arad were face-to-face today, he wouldn't be in a good position right now.
That would not work out well for our producer, Arad. That is for sure.
I'd give him a noogie.
It did work out well for him last night. The Patriots running the ball 46 times on the Buffalo Bills and beating them 14-10. Mac Jones just 3 pass attempts in the Patriots 14-10 win on the road in Buffalo. We'll talk to Dave Feshtrick from the Toronto Star about that. We'll get his thoughts on the Jason Spezza situation. And could the Raptors perhaps make a play for Damian Lillard should he become available in Portland? That's coming up on First Up.
Toss comes to the near side for Harris. He runs through a big hole, and he's gone to the 50. A burst to the 40. Alone to the 20. Damian Harris to the house. Touchdown, Patriots.
What a night for the New England Patriots ground game. 46 rush attempts last night of 49 total plays. That's right. The New England Patriots threw the ball 3 times. They completed 2 passes and were still able to beat the Buffalo Bills 14-10 in some of the most outrageous weather conditions you will ever see in any sport. Let's welcome in Dave Feshtrick from the Toronto Star, who's covered a litany of great sporting events over the years. I'm sure there's been some inclement weather along the way. What's the craziest sporting event weather-wise you've covered over the course of your career, Dave?
That's a great question, fellas. Great to be with
Thank you
this
you.
Morning.
Thank you very much.
What's up, Dave?
What's up, Carlo? How are you? Well, first of all, let me just say, Carlo, you took a beating around this station when you were off for a couple of days last week for the notion that you would not have been happy to be present at Orchard Park, New York last night to witness that game, even though you are a card-carrying member of the Bills Mafia, unless you were in a private box. And may I say, man, you're a wise man. Jeez. I am totally with you on that one. Like, I
may be,
some...
it's a good old saying, Dave. I may be dumb, but I ain't stupid.
Exactly. Yeah, I really appreciate you're not a particularly old guy, but you're an old soul
exactly.
when it comes to knowing when you need to be indoors and when it's okay to be outdoors.
Exactly.
And let me say. What have I covered? Man, I remember the Pyeongchang Olympics, man, in recent memory, because my memory is terrible. I've been doing this a lot longer than a couple of years. But the Pyeongchang Olympics, man, that was like minus 40 Celsius at times. I remember being up on the ski slope,
Jeez.
Standing around waiting for the skiers to come down. And I did not have enough clothes on, and I had like every piece of clothing I brought to Korea was on my body at that moment. I had about 4 pairs of socks and a big pair of Sorel boots, and let me just say, nothing against the Sorel company, but my feet were absolutely icebergs. But yeah, I'm with you on that one, Carlo. The comfort of a private box last night would have been a very nice thing.
Look, if that game was in the middle of the day, fine, but. You know, the temperatures always drop at night. It's Buffalo. You anticipated what the weather's going to be. And look, I don't know how you feel, Dave, but I'm not a fan of watching a highly anticipated football game. Think about the 2 hyped games that we were, given the opportunity to watch this year. It was week 4, New England versus Tampa Bay. It was the return of Brady to Foxborough. That game was ruined because of the weather. Last night, you know, the most hyped game in week 13 because it was the Bills versus the rival Patriots at home for first place, ruined because of the weather. I don't know how you feel, but I didn't enjoy watching that game last night, regardless of the result.
Yeah, I mean, like last night is a absolute endorsement of why cold weather cities need dome stadiums.
Yes,
right? Like, I totally agree with you. And you know, it was funny because I saw some of the Twitter conversation. There were people looking at some of those clips of video of the ESPN crew sitting on the field,
yes,
before the game, actually getting blown over, literally blown over on those high top chairs with Adam Schefter and the rest of the crew. And there were people saying, oh, it's football weather. I love it. It's football weather. And some of the wiser U.S. writers who hail from more, you know, reasonable cities, more reasonably clement cities in the States were saying, this is not football weather, guys. Like, this is a sport where the majority of the players come from Texas,
right,
Mississippi, California. They don't get weather like this in those places. That's like that's like saying, like, you know, it's like when people say, oh, it's a great day for hockey when it's 35 Celsius in Arizona. And those of us who hail from actual hockey country, yeah, say, no, it's not. This is not. We don't play hockey when it's 35 Celsius. Sorry. Mm. But, yeah, no, I got a kick out of that. It's not football weather. And the thing about last night was it proved that Bill Belichick is the smartest guy in the room again, because he figured out how to win the game. He figured out how to become the first NFL coach to throw the ball three times and win since 1968, guys. Like, yeah, nobody had done that since 1968 for a very good reason, because it's impossible to do. Yeah. But it didn't tell us whether the Bills are better than the Patriots. It didn't tell us whether the Patriots are better than the Bills in regular game conditions, and that was the shame of it.
I totally agree. And talk about the great equalizer. I mean, the CFL playoffs ongoing right now. We've seen countless games where the weather has completely altered the fortunes of one team versus the other, simply because when it's cold and windy and the field is slippery, it just balances everything out. And I think last night is a prime example. If you play that game in 25 degree weather in the middle of July, I think the Bills are a better team than New England is. But considering the circumstances of the ability for New England to run the ball and Buffalo being unable to throw it, that is a very interesting proposition for sure. I think for the Buffalo Bills did not work out nearly as well as it did for the Patriots. Dave Festruck from The Star is our guest. When you look at the AFC East right now, and, you know, the Bills are basically in control. I mean, the Patriots are basically in control with the Bills playing Tampa next Sunday afternoon, which should be an amazing game, Dave. But how do you evaluate these two teams going forward? Do you think the Patriots are rightfully considered the best team in the AFC right now?
I mean, you know, how many times do we have to see it before we, you know, before we're convinced that Bill Belichick is the genius of geniuses? You know, I was saying this yesterday with Mark Rowe on gameplay. Like, how many times do we doubt these guys that are proven to be the leaders in their field? And I'm thinking about Bill Belichick. I'm thinking about Nick Saban being an underdog with the Alabama Crimson Tide on the weekend. Somehow he convinced the world that the Crimson Tide were 6.5-point underdogs to Georgia. And then what do you know? Alabama blew the doors off of Georgia. Like, who is surprised? Who is surprised by that? Who that's looking at sort of the greater historical arc of these guys' careers? And of course, Belichick and Saban have crossed paths. They're friends. Saban kind of fell off the Bill Belichick coaching tree. I mean, it's just incredible how much coaching matters in the NFL. And I think that's the question you have to ask yourself if you're a Buffalo Bills fan, Carlo, is Sean McDermott psyched out now? Like, is he so psyched out by Bill Belichick in this season when, you know, they thought they'd slayed the demon last year when they won the AFC East for the first time in eons and the Patriots had a down year. But now, what do you know? The evil genius is back, living rent-free in the proverbial head of Sean McDermott. And I'm wondering, like, I think that's the factor here. I think Bills have the better talent. They've got the better quarterback. They may have, you know, the better personnel en masse. But I don't think there's any doubt who's got the better mastermind. And yeah, that concerns me if I'm a Bills fan.
Well, it's like when you're talking about people that are champions, you're the champion until somebody dethrones you, right? And for Bill Belichick, you're the best until somebody takes over. And clearly, no one has been able to do that and show any differently. This guy continues to find ways to win. And you know, it sucks to talk about as a Bills fan, but it's the reality of it, and there's nothing we can really do about it. He showed last night why he still should be considered one of the best. To pivot here to hockey, Dave, and Maple Leafs, what did you make about the news coming out yesterday about both Jason Spezza having an in-person hearing for his hit on Pionk and the suspension granted to Pionk for his knee-on-knee on Rasmus Sandin, who, as reported yesterday by TSN insider Chris Johnson, will be out 2 to 3 weeks.
Well, it burns you up if you're a Leaf fan, and I understand. Like, I'm not a fan. I don't have a rooting interest in this. But as somebody who likes to see the right thing done, like, if you're a Leaf fan, you totally understand why Jason Spezza did what he did, even if you can't justify what Jason Spezza did, right? Like, there's no justifying going after a guy like that, especially the way it turned out with Jason Spezza's knee, giving a jolt to Neil Pionk's head. You can't look at that play and say, oh, that's the way hockey should be. That kind of vigilante justice can't be allowed. And I think Jason Spezza is going to get a pretty lengthy suspension. I would guess he's going to get double what Pionk got. I would guess 4 games if I had to guess right now. And that. Just on the face of those two fouls, that makes sense to me. What doesn't make sense is how the game got to that point and why Jason Spezza at age 38 felt like, well, in this league, in my workplace, the only way to make up for Neil Pionk taking out our young stud defenseman, Rasmus Sandin, the only way that's vengeance will be exacted or justice will be served is if I go after Pionk. And we know why that is, because the referees didn't do their job in that game. They allowed that game to devolve into what Austin Matthews rightly called a gong show. You know, Mary Lemieux had his garage league moment. Austin Matthews had his gong show moment two nights ago in Winnipeg. And I understand why Matthews is frustrated, because he's getting ragdolled like he's a fourth liner by Pierre-Luc Dubois, and somehow he gets a penalty, and there's coincidental minors handed out, which leads to the 4-on-4, which leads to the Pionk hit, which leads to Spezza's retaliation, which leads to a bunch of other nonsense. If the referees would have just done their job, given Dubois an extra minor, given the Maple Leafs the power play, which clearly Matthews was going for, like, you're playing against a team with a 31st of 32 teams penalty kill. They're the 31st ranked penalty kill in Winnipeg. If you're Austin Matthews, you're doing the smart thing by taking that wrestling, you know, nonsense from Dubois. You're waiting to get on the power play against the Winnipeg Jets, where you're most likely going to score if you're Austin Matthews. He takes all that. Brad Myers, the referee, is standing right there watching it go on way too long, as though he's some sort of, you know, amateur wrestling fan. And we got what we got. But I totally understand why there's frustration in Leafland, and I'm not one to generally criticize officials. I generally defend officials, but the officials blew that game so badly, and we are where we are because of it.
Dave, so Spezza won't be in the lineup tonight. We're uncertain if Mitch Marner will make his return. He missed the last 2 games against Minnesota and Winnipeg. And I think Carlo brought up a really interesting idea of Josh Hosang being called up tonight if Marner does indeed miss. How do you think that idea could play out?
I love it. I mean, like Carlo, I'm somebody who's a big Josh Hosang fan. I think there's a lot of people in Toronto who've watched that young man grow up as a phenom in minor hockey, who played alongside Connor McDavid on that incredible Toronto Marlies team. We've watched, you know, the professional travails of Josh Hosang, you know, the run-ins with Lou Lamoriello and the New York Islanders, and all the mistakes he's made, undoubtedly. But it doesn't change the fact that he's an incredible talent who I'd love to see get more opportunity at the top level. And it looks like, you know, judging from what you look at with his work with the Toronto Marlies, it looks as though he's playing really well. I think, what does he have, 3 goals and 5 points in that 4-game stretch recently? He's been lighting it up down there. And look, it's going to be tough for him, I think. In a league where coaches have so little tolerance for coloring outside the lines, so to speak, especially this Maple Leafs team now that they've become a largely, you know, Winnipeg's game aside, a very defensively responsible juggernaut of a team that it's in the top, you know, I think they're second right now in goals against per game. It's going to be tough to jump on that moving train if you're Josh Hosang, where each one of your puck decisions is going to be scrutinized, you know, incredibly by some of the best coaches in the world. I don't love his chances of hanging around, but I'm with Carlo. I'd love to see him get the chance.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think people are saying, I just tweeted it out, people are saying he needs to sign a contract first to do that. And, I mean, that's not hard to do. If the guy warrants a chance to get called up, it's a simple signature that signs him a two-way deal and he can find a way to get up. But, look, it's adversity that the Maple Leafs are dealing with right now. You know, no Rasmus Sandin. You're going to have Dermott and Nylegren, you know, fill out that bottoms or that sixth defenseman pairing, and you got, you know, decisions looming with Marner and Spezza. I think this is, you know, you talk about this, the early part of the season that the Maple Leafs have had. I mean, so far a success story. They banked a lot of points, but does the depth of this team start to concern you?
I was just thinking about that question. I think the storyline to me, Carla, that got overshadowed by all the extracurricular nonsense in Winnipeg was the fact that that game gave us a pretty unflattering look at Toronto's defense core, starting with the fact that as the game began, Sheldon Keefe demoted Justin Hall to the third pairing. And I'm wondering, you know, we were talking about this. I was talking about this with Jim Taddy on the post game show, like, you know, Justin Hall's had a really tough game in Minnesota. I think everybody had a tough game in Winnipeg when it came to the 2-on-1 fest that blew it open for the Winnipeg Jets in the second period of that game, where it wasn't just the Toronto defensemen who were culpable. It was the entire 5-man unit skating in front of Joseph Woll that was culpable in allowing the Jets to just, you know, steam to the net unhindered. But that bothers me if I'm on the Maple Leafs coaching staff right now. We're just at a moment when I thought I had a defense core I could trust. Suddenly we're backsliding a little bit here, and Justin Hall would be the number one guy who hasn't performed to the level that this team has come to expect from him. So I think Riley Brody's fine, but the idea that they tried Muzzin Liljegren in that Winnipeg Jets game, I'm not sure that's anything that's going to stick. And then it was Sandin Hall on the bottom pair. Obviously now Travis Dermott will slide in there as Rasmus Sandin rehabs his knee injury. So yeah, there's the idea that, you know, the thing that kills me, Carlo, is the idea that it was being tossed around that they were going to trade a defenseman.
I don't know where that nonsense came from.
Well, I said it at the time, like I remember Mike Babcock, of all the things Mike Babcock said that resonates with me. Sometimes I remember Mike Babcock once saying you need 9 defensemen to get through a regular season and a playoff run with the way injuries happen in this league. Right now they got 7. And with
I don't
Sandino,
even think they've got 7.
Well,
they've
got Sandino, 6. They got with, 6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So even with Sandin healthy, I mean, Liljegren was never an NHL defenseman until this year, right?
Exactly.
So,
I don't know. And the question is, like, that's my question is, like, he wasn't an NHL defenseman until this year. I remember you being highly skeptical, Carlo, before the season of whether or not he'd be able to stick. And now you're saying he's a top 4 NHL defenseman, which is what they said in Winnipeg. I'm very dubious that that's going to work long term. As much as I like Timothy Liljegren, I've been saying, you know, from the beginning of the season that Sandin and Liljegren are really good as a third pair in sheltered situations where they don't have to do too much. They don't have to play against top competition. You start changing that situation, Carlo. I mean, I don't know. You've been in that situation. What does that do to a guy if you move him up from third pair of duty up into first or second pair of duty?
Well, it puts a lot of pressure on him, right? You're playing with different matchups. You know, you're exposing yourself to bigger minutes in different situations, and I guess this is their way of saying, well, look, he's looked good so far. Let's see how much more he can do for us right now while we can afford to do it, and, you know, find out what it is that we really have. And I mean, I think they got their answer real quick that maybe he's just not ready for that right now.
Yeah, and rightly so. I mean, I don't think anybody who's a neutral observer expected him to be ready. I don't think you can expect him to be ready. I mean, you know, it's the old saying, but you don't really know what you got in an NHL defenseman until, well, Randy Carlyle used to say 300 games, which seemed a little much for me, but I get the gist of what Randy Carlyle was always saying there. It's like, you at least need a couple of seasons to know what you got in a guy. And the last thing you want to do is rush him into a role he can't handle. To me, that would skew the results of what you're trying to find out. And I think Liljegren and Sandin are both much better off if they're held back on the third pair. But the question now is, given the depth situation, is that even feasible?
Dave, should be an interesting day for the Leafs heading into a game against Columbus tonight. What the status, the length of the suspension will be for Jason Spezza, we'll find out this afternoon. We'll also find out if Mitch Marner will be in. And maybe, just maybe, we get a look at Josh Hosang tonight in his debut with the Leafs as a regular season player. Thank you for doing this, my man. We appreciate it.
Always fun, gentlemen. Have a great day.
You too, buddy.
All right. That is Dave Hasechuk from the Toronto Star. He's right. I mean, the defense, and we go back to that conversation about what they were trying to trade Dermott, trying to trade Hall. I mean, now I think you might be looking at, and listen, Sandin's only out 2 to 3 weeks, right? I mean, this is not a long, long-term issue. But I think as the playoffs approach, and listen, the salary cap's going to be an impediment to any type of decision that Kyle Dubas wants to make, but depth on D, pretty important aspect for Toronto. And I think that's something they'll be looking to address as we get closer to the trade deadline.
They have to.
Yeah,
they have to.
I don't think there's really much of a choice.
Look, you got 50 plus games left too. Can you sit here and feel comfortably saying, knowing what the schedule you're going to encounter, that Jake Muzzin is not going to get any bumps and bruises, Justin Hall is not going to get any bumps, and Morgan Riley, TJ Brody, like, guys are going to suffer some bumps and bruises along the way. And I mean, you've got to protect yourself, and I said at the beginning of the year, like, I was concerned about their depth on defense, because it is a legitimate concern, especially when you have a guy that, you know, a young player that has looked so promising in all the games that he's played this year, now go down, and you hope it's 2 to 3 weeks and nothing longer, but you just don't know, right? We don't even know what it is that he's dealing with yet.
Exactly. So we'll talk to Cam Jansen, longtime NHLer from the Cam and Strick podcast. He'll join us next about the Leafs, the situation with Winnipeg in the third period on Sunday night, what type of suspension we can expect Jason Spezza to receive, and a bunch of news around the NHL. I mean, a couple of coaching changes, including Vancouver and in Philadelphia. Cam Jansen on the way here on First Up. Oh, yeah. When you hear this music on First Up, it means one thing. Cam Jansen, our good buddy, longtime NHLer, hosted the Cam and Strick podcast, has finally made his return to the program, as he does every Tuesday morning. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
What's up, guys? What's going on?
Oh, only good things. Lots of suspension discussion here in Toronto. But first, I want to ask you to recall memories of your time being a teammate of my partner here, Carlo Koliakova. We were talking about some of his fights over the course of his NHL career, including one against Jason
Spezza. Why are you laughing?
Why are you laughing, and what do you remember about Carlo dropping the gloves?
Well, not much.
Come on, James.
No, I'll say, no. Carlo wants to go. Look, there's guys that will surprise you, man. You know, just because you don't fight a lot doesn't mean you don't know how. When push comes to shove, or you get rocked and you get pissed off, like, guys can come out of their shell and throw bombs. I've seen it a million times. I've seen guys that aren't supposed to be tough knock and pound tough dudes just because what's in the going on in their head. So, look, Carlo would hit guys. Like, Carlo would get – he would get a little reckless in front of the net, meaning, like, he'd go up against a big guy, maybe stick him in a spot where you probably shouldn't. Carlo was, pretty good with a stick when it comes to that. But, no, man – Carlo would catch you with your head down once in a while, and sometimes you gotta pay the piper.
Gents, just to refresh your memory, just Google Koliakovo versus Clutterbuck, and you'll understand that you don't mess with me when I'm angry. And
no, I can just
imagine you standing on the bench saying, now.
Oh, I loved it, dude. Anytime somebody that didn't really fight a lot went out there and gave it their all, man, that pumps up the team so much.
Yeah.
Now, let me tell you, I will say this, though. For all you guys out there, and you notice this, too. If there is a fight and somebody runs somebody over and somebody jumps somebody and just there's no punches thrown and just fall down and you're out for 5 minutes like that, you just, like, there's ways to avoid that, you know? Like, I'll give you an example. Like, Braden Schenn's been fighting quite a bit, you know, for the Blues. And I love that guy. He is such an awesome dude, such a warrior. But every time he fights, Carlo, I'm like, oh, no. I'm like, because A, you know, he's not really beating anybody up. And B, he plays 20 minutes a night.
Yeah.
C, he's one of our leaders. If he falls on his hand wrong, he's already beat up because he goes 100 miles an hour. I don't want him fighting anymore. It kind of worries you because you need him on the ice. You only have 17 skaters.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. That's the concern when you have your best players doing jobs that you should be doing if you were still playing the game. I'm pretty sure you caught some of the highlights or even caught the game on Sunday night between the Leafs and the Winnipeg Jets, and you saw how things went off the rails there in the third period. What did you make about first some of the questionable reffing non-calls in that game and where the state of refereeing is in the NHL?
Oh, it's all over the place. It's all over the place. We all know it. Now, you know, I don't want to bash the refs too bad, but, man, they are very, very inconsistent. Yes, the game's 100 miles an hour. Yes, you see this in every sport. You know, some bad calls in the NFL every single weekend, too. People complain about that. But hockey, man, it really, really changes the game, you know, like it does. Like, if the ref's going one way or the other, like, it just completely changes the way the game goes. And sometimes a ref could call a penalty and just stop everything. It'll just stop the emotion, you know? Like, the good ones know when to do that and when not to do it when things are getting crazy out there. But as far as what happened in that particular game, that was a crazy game, man. Like, it was. Like, Winnipeg was all in. They were pumped up afterwards. You know, Simmons started losing his mind. But as far as, like, let me get my buddy, Jason Spezza, who, you know, we absolutely adore. The nicest guy in the world, just works and works and works and just does what he's supposed to do, makes minimum salary.
True pro.
You know, just goes out there. But he's going to get dinged for a couple games here, dude. Like he is.
What do you expect? What type of games are you expecting him to serve?
So
I mean, we saw Pionk get two games. He's the guy who created an injury on a player. Spezza created a play that was predatory a little bit, but what type of games do you expect him to get? Because I was surprised they got the in-person.
That's it. I can't believe, like, he doesn't get in trouble. Like, he doesn't do anything stupid. He doesn't whack guys with a stick. He doesn't elbow anybody. And he's still got that in-game hearing. And that's like, oh, boy, okay. But, look, both those hits are bad in different ways, you know? Like, you don't knee people. Like, you can't do that. It's like an automatic injury if you stick your leg out. Now, I will say this. Sometimes it's a natural reaction when a guy sidestepped you to either throw your elbow out or throw your knee out. They're both bad. And in this case, he just was too wide with the stance and he caught him weird. Now the Spezza thing, you know what he was trying to do. You know, I mean, sometimes it's weird as a hitter when you go and you got a guy lined up and you're like, oh boy, here it comes. And he falls that split second in your mind. You got to drop out of that hit, right? You just got to get out of it. Whether it looks goofy and you're out of the play, you can't fall down with the guy and aim for his head when he's already on the ice. It's bad. He's probably going to get 2-4, I would say. I know that's an easy cop-out answer, but I don't know. I mean, he's got to get more than two, right? If you're going to in-game hearing. So it's confusing, but he's going to get a couple games one way or the other, and that's fine. I just don't like seeing that Jason Spezza get suspended because he's just an all-around great guy, and he's not a dirty player.
Yeah, the 1 o'clock hearing for Jason Spezza, that's an in-person hearing, so the NHL can go for 5 games or more if that's how they decide to go. I'm just reading your Wikipedia page, Cam.
Oh, God.
Here's how it goes. Jansen was widely regarded as one of the toughest enforcers in the league throughout his low-scoring tenure.
Oh
yeah, what is that? I mean, that's a little unnecessary.
Was that in the English league?
Yeah,
I didn't even score in that league. Look, that was good in the locker room. Okay, did they put that in Wikipedia? Don't read the rest of that, by the way.
We will alter that for you, Cam. But Spezza has his hearing today. I imagine you've had your fair share of hearings with NHL player safety over your time in the league. What were those hearings like? Can you share any stories about those experiences?
Oh yeah, man. I rocked, it's not funny, but Matt Bradley one time, he just drove me crazy in the corner. And I'm like, I'm going to get you. And I remember on a back check, he's coming around in that, and I, at home, I just lay him out so bad. And then this poor rookie comes up to me and tries to fight me, and I feed him with lefts. And afterwards, I just rubbish on the ground. This poor kid's knocked out. This other kid's laying there. You know, I'm like, oh, boy, what did I do? And so I had a hearing. We had an Olympic break. And I remember being in the – I didn't have to go to New York or whatever. But I did it in Larry Poe's office, Carlo, in the old crappy mills, you know. Okay. And my agent was on a conference call with me. And, gosh, who was it? I don't even remember. And I remember my agent just kissing my butt the whole time. Camzy, he's just so good. And this, and on and on and on. I'm just, like, rolling my eyes. And it was up to, like, you know, if you got – we were thinking maybe 1 to 2 games because my agent was really digging at him, saying I'm just a good da-da-da-da-da. And, oh, boy, didn't want to hear any of that. He goes, nope, you got 5 games. I'm like, okay. And it just was so embarrassing because I'm like, okay, stop pumping my tires up. I made a mistake. Let's just get this over with. And, you know, I don't care what your agent says, how good he is. They know, and they're going to give you what they're going to give you. But, yeah, man, it is what it is. Spez is a good dude. You don't want to knee anybody. That's kind of a predatorial hit. I can't wait to see those guys play again.
Gents, you're the king
watching
of
this. I'm watching that hit.
Oh, Matt my. Bradley
oh,
hit.
And now the fight. Oh, was it Quentin Lang is who you fought?
Yeah, and listen.
Oh my goodness.
I know.
Wow, this poor kid got fed left. You were right.
I know. It's not good. I'm probably going
How many
out,
games did you get for that?
I got 5.
Oof.
That's a 5-gamer, right? Carl, look at that hit. That's a 5-gamer.
Yeah. I'm looking at it right
These
now.
These days, you know what? There might be a referendum on the sport for that hit.
Dude. So I get booted out of the game. I go up to the press box, and Jason Chimera, who wasn't playing, tries to fight me up there. And I go, what?
What
are you going to do? Yes. Jason Chimera, who's just, you know, trying to stick up for it. Like, he's a, you know, he works hard, man. I liked him, dude. He was a hard-nosed guy when he played, fast, big. You know, he wasn't that tough. So I was like, what are you doing, dude? You're not fighting me here. Especially off the ice. I'll put you in a pretzel so fast your head will spin. But he tried to fight me in the press box, and I'm like, open. And John Erskine was up there, and I'm like, oh, boy. But then I walked down. And Erskine's cool, dude. So I walked down the locker room, and I talked to Bradley, and I just apologized, man. And what do you do? That's all you could do there, man. And yeah. I paid the piper, and it is what it is.
I'm looking at the fight on hockeyfights.com, and there's voting results on who won the fight. Only 79% of votes are in your favor. There were 12% who voted for Quentin Lang. And let me tell you, those 12% are blind because you absolutely won that fight.
That was his fan. I don't think that kid played another game, by the way, which is, you know, not something to brag about, but it is what it is.
Well, Jance, I'm looking at this play, and I actually blame Eric Johnson because you did what you had to do. You won the faceoff. You went to the front of the net. He didn't get his shot through, so you should have maybe fought him instead of Matt Bradley for putting yourself in that position. Just going back to the Leaf game, obviously there was a lot of emotions. We saw some scrums that ended up into, you know, shoving matches and some fights and stuff. But what did you make of Logan Stanley pulling a move out of Cam Jansen's book, getting the crowd going and using the helmet as sort of like a victory celebration?
Did he even win that fight? I mean, look, what are you doing? You know, I wasn't a big celebrating. I mean, sometimes.
You loved getting the crowd going after fights, especially when when your shirt was off and you'd skate to the box.
But I would say this though, like if I had a 2.5-minute fight at center ice, and afterwards we're like, ah, and you know, you lift your hand up and you're at home and all your buddies are watching. Whatever. That's not necessarily disrespect because you both just went toe to toe. But if you have like a weak fight. And you get up and you're like, oh, look at me, I did it. And it's just like the guys that know, no. And they're like, okay, get on with yourself. But I think everybody at that point was so emotional. They're all jacked up. They're all trying to get in. He's probably lucky he didn't get pounded by Simmons anyway. And so, look, I don't mind it. Just know when to do it, you know. Throw a punch first if you're going to celebrate at least and maybe connect, you know.
Cam Jansen's our guest. You know him from the Cam and Strick podcast. And recently you guys had Bruce Boudreaux on your pod, and he made his debut as the new coach of the Vancouver Canucks last night. But before the game, he did his press conference. And here's how it sounded when it concluded and he was getting up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, nice little grunt. A little difficult to get up these days for old Brucey. What do you make of his hiring there, Cam? You know Bruce very well, and do you think that's the right fit for Vancouver?
Well, I think anything's going to be right for Vancouver right now. I mean, they're just in a weird spot. But Bruce Boudreaux is a super guy. All like I said this before, even last week, I think I talked about the coaches, man. They all are so cocky, crazy. They watch it every 2 seconds. That's all they do. I mean, they're nuts about it. When we had him on, he was so down to earth. He's kind of like doo-doo-doo guy. Like, you know, he's kind of goofy, you know. He's kind of sloppy looking at times. He's got barbecue sauce on him all the time, you know. But I think – I know, he's never going to live that one down. But I think the guys will respect him. Like, he's kind of that – you could talk to him a little bit. You know, he's never coached me, but you could just tell. When you talk to a guy for an hour and a half and he's down to earth, he's answering every single question. He's got a great hockey mind. They need a change over there. You know, he's a likable dude if you're playing well and if you're playing – hard for him. He's going to like you and respect you. And that's really all you can ask for, man. X's and O's kind of guy. But I think he's going to make the locker room kind of lively. Watch some of his speeches on YouTube. They're absolutely hilarious. And sometimes you don't have to be a Craig Berube where you walk in there and you give your speech like, this is what we're doing. Sometimes you got to be, you come in kind of quirky. You give out the game plan. The guys might, you know, laugh a little bit, but they're going to play hard for you, you know?
Yeah. Well, look, they got the response that they needed. The new coach bump in an impressive win yesterday. Brad Shaw takes over as D coach and the PK coach, which has been struggling lately. And me and you both know Brad Shaw really well. It's almost like a role that he was made for. But, you know, it's Boudreau takes over in Vancouver. Mike Yeo takes over in Philadelphia. You know Mike Yeo very well from his time in St. Louis. What do you make about the decision there to go with Yeo after the Vigneault firing?
Well, you know, I was like, oh, this is great until the Flyers had out those, like, police doggies, you know, and the one goes right to center ice, takes a big dump. I'm like, yep, they're screwed.
Gritty must have been pissed about that.
Oh, my God. Like, is that not a sign? Is that not a sign from above? Like, things aren't going great here. Mike Yeo's a good dude, man. Look, I don't know where that's going to go. But look, Mike Yeo couldn't figure it out here. You know, he obviously got fired. Craig Berube took over, and we all know what happened after that in 2019. But the guys liked him, man. They did. It didn't work here. We'll see how it is with Philly. They lost 9 in a row. They have no good goaltending to – I mean, up and down the lineup, it's just kind of a mess right now. That's a tough organization to play for when you suck. The fans are all over you. You got dogs crapping at center ice. Things are bad there, and it shouldn't be because if you look at their lineup, they got a bunch of skill. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, no, I don't understand that whole situation either in Philly. I mean, with all that talent, all the changes that they made, 9 in a row, man. Oof. We asked the question this morning. AK asked me, he goes, which team do you think has a better chance to turn around their season? Is it Philly or Vancouver?
Well,
good question, compelling content.
Or what about the Islanders? You know, I feel bad for them.
Well, they're not making a coaching change, right? So.
Well, no, but I'm just, no, you're right. They're just in a bad jam. There's some teams that shouldn't be in a jam, and they are. And I don't understand Philly. Islanders, I could look back, and you could sit back and look at that and what happened to them early on and what type of team they are. If they're not rolling four lines and going and going and going, They're not gonna beat you, you know. Like the Islanders have to be on as a team to beat you. They're not gonna have their superstars take games over. You know what I mean? So they're in a weird spot. Who's gonna be better, Vancouver or Philly? Who's gonna get? Oh, dude, I'm gonna say Philly.
Yeah,
I'm gonna say Philly's gonna turn it around.
Yeah, I think both teams are gonna turn it around. I mean, like it's just a matter of will they be able to turn it around and make the playoffs?
Yeah.
I think that's probably the bigger question because neither Vancouver nor Philly are bad teams. I mean, both have a lot of talent up front and in goal and on the back end. I mean, I think both teams are actually really good, but it's just a matter of putting it together. Cam, did you watch Monday Night Football last night?
Oh, well, yeah. The most boring game ever. Yeah. So boring. Hey, can I give a hot take out real quick?
Sure. Love hot takes.
I listened to the Manning cast, watched the Manning cast, and I got to admit, I love those guys. I don't like it.
You don't like the Manning cast?
I don't like the Manning cast. Mm-hmm. I can't hear what they're saying, for one. For two, they talk over each other way too much. They need to be all on one couch watching the same game. Your guests need to be there by you because it's just so delayed. They're talking over each other. You could barely hear Peyton, and then you could barely hear Eli, but then their guest is loud. It's just, and then I turn it back to the regular feed. Now I can feel the crowd, right?
Yeah.
If you turn you could feel the crowd. The announcers are breaking the game down. They're just telling stories the whole time. half of the stuff I don't even understand what they're talking about. You could barely hear them. So I changed the channel and I watched the regular feed because I could feel the crowd passion. It's just, it makes me feel like I'm watching a normal game. Watching a Manning cast, it seems like they're watching a game had happened last week and they're breaking it down. I don't know. It's goofy.
I loved the Manning cast early on when they had guests that you. I thought were relevant. Like, I know a disrespect to David Letterman, but like, come on. What is this?
Come
what
on.
Is this, 1997 here? Like, come on.
They can't get any football players anymore because of the curse.
Exactly. Aqib Talib is a great broadcaster, was a really good defensive back, but come on. Like, if it was just Peyton and Eli breaking it down, talking, and I'm totally with you. I've changed my tune on the Manning cast. I watched a little bit last night. I'm like, all right. I'm not really interested in this anymore. I think the regular broadcast is better.
I agree. You could, it's just you're watching the game. Like, you could feel the game. You could feel the crowd. You could see the game better. You could see the wind blowing. And I don't know. It's just. I went back and forth. I'm like, I don't know if I like this. Now those guys are totally cool. They're forcing the issue with the guests.
Exactly.
You're too fun. You don't need guests.
It's true.
I was just going to say that. Like, early on, there was excitement around it. It was cool. It was new. But now it's just, they're just running out of ideas, and it's just getting stale.
They had, like, Condoleezza Rice on there and stuff.
Yeah,
and I know.
I don't know.
What are we doing?
I'm with you, man. That's why on this show, I always say, we only need one guest every Tuesday. It's just Cam Jansen, everybody else. You know, we don't need anybody else. But, you know, I don't always get my way on this show, so... As you guys are well aware.
I get that. No, Carlos says he runs a show over there. We all know that.
who is on the...
You're not supposed to share too many things I share with you, Jans.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to know what's going on in your text thread between you two gentlemen. But what's going on in the Cam and Strick podcast this week, Cam?
We got Kenny Holland out today. Man, he was awesome, you know.
Beautiful.
He didn't do many of those, you know, interviews and stuff like that. And we dug into, you know, the Red Wings with him and Connor McDavid. Just, he was so cool. Talked to us for an hour and a half. So we got him, and then we had David Backus live yesterday.
Ooh.
He looks great, man. Well, he looks really skinny, Carlo. I mean, really skinny.
I noticed that. He posted in a picture like a with Petro for the charity that he does with dogs. Oh, man, I'm drawing a blank right now. Athletes for Animals. And, man, did he look skinny. It's like, dude, you just finished playing. You're not supposed to get skinnier. Yeah.
Well, no.
He's got to go the Kuliakova way.
Yeah,
right.
we get fat. He's like a lineman. He's like a lineman that was like 330, and then they retire. You can't even recognize him. He got so skinny. But he looks good, man. Back is just such a good guy. He came in and sat next to us for a couple hours. He got an award last night at the MAC Club in St. Louis with a bunch of other big dogs, too. So he's just the nicest guy in the world and such a good leader. And, you know, we asked him, you know, he's going to be a GM one of these days, dude. Like, he's that
I was going to ask you, what's his plan? Have you talked to him about what he plans on doing next?
Well, he said right now he wants to enjoy his life with his family, of course. And you know, and for a year he's going to watch his kids kind of grow up or something. And you know he's going to get that call from somebody. And they're going to have him sit right next. Like, they're going to have GM's going to call him. And they're going to say, sit next to me, kid, because you're a. We're gonna teach you the ropes here. He's a smart man. He's been through a lot. And if I was a GM, I'd have him by my side the whole time. Pick his brain, see what he has to say.
You guys have to explain this to me, because I think of guys like Joe Sakic and Rob Blake, sure, David Backus made millions, tens of millions of dollars over the course of their playing career. Why do they want to be GMs and spend, 70, 80 hours a week working? They could be playing golf and hanging out in LA or Florida or whatever, just relaxing and enjoying their retirement. Instead, they're working harder than they did when they played in the NHL.
Because they want to compete again. And the next big thing to do as a retired player, if you're a GM, like, you're the man. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you're the big, big dog. So, like, there, he was a big dog. He was a captain, you know, first, second line, did all this stuff. Now afterwards, like, I'm bored. What's my next status I can get to? Well, GM's like the coolest thing possible. So all the players, whether you're in media or whatever, the ex-players that turn into GMs, they're the big dogs. And I know it's hard work, but, like, you're the guy. He's got so much knowledge. And, like, I know how to have fun. I know how to, like, relax. If I didn't have to do anything, although my job's easy, I know I could entertain myself all day long. A lot of these guys can't, man, and they're bored out of their minds.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing you can do is be a GM If you got the brain power to do it and you got the time you want to do it, then why wouldn't you?
And look, I think I can speak off half a chance too. When you're so used to living a certain way with playing a sport and, you know, living day to day and having to, you know, keep yourself, you know, mentally engaged in that, when you separate from that and go from that type of lifestyle to completely nothing, you kind of drive yourself crazy doing it, right? Especially when you grow up in the game of hockey. So I'm not surprised that players step into that role, because, you know, part of the thing that scared me, and I don't know, Jets, how you felt about it, is you knew that the door was going to close on your career, but what you were nervous about is what you were going to do next and how quickly you were going to do it.
Oh, and then I look at my bank account and I'm like, I didn't save enough money. Oh, let me check out my college degree. No, I don't have one. Oh, how about my high school? Nope, don't have that either. What the hell am I going to do? Yeah. Well, you better go entertain people, Cam. You're an entertainer now. That's what you're going to do. And, you know, I get thrown in the mix, and all of a sudden they give me my own radio show, and I work my butt off on it, and now I can do
it. And you're having fun doing it.
Oh, it's a blast. It's a blast. Right. You know, and I don't take myself seriously at all. And, you know, and that's kind of and you're self-deprecating. It's a good combination.
Well, Cam, you're always a valuable part of this show. And listen, you and Carlo have both thrived as broadcasters, one more than the other. I won't say which is which, but I think we could all take a pretty good guess as to who I'm referring to.
Well, you're in Toronto. You're the bigger dog. Let's be honest here. I'm in Podunk, St. Louis.
You got a number one podcast, man, the Canada Shrink podcast. You guys are all over the place on all platforms.
Yeah,
great guests.
That changes with the wind. It's all good. It's all good. We're all doing good, man. We all should be happy.
I love the optimism, the positivity to wrap up today's segment. Thank you for doing this, Cam. We appreciate the time.
Anytime, dudes. Be cool.
See you, buddy.
That's Cam Jansen from the Cam and Strick podcast. Yeah, it is always really interesting because, you know, you talk to people and you know, I guess myself more so than you, but like I think back to when the O-Dog joined TSN Radio back in, I guess, 2012. I mean, if I can recall correctly, he was living in Florida playing like 36 a day and kind of just got bored. And we started calling him at radio and he came in and, well, listen, O-Dog's one of the biggest stars in sports media in this country now. He's been an unbelievable addition for TSN over the last decade. And it's just it was kind of a thing that just naturally developed for him, right? And I think the same can apply to so many different players trying to figure out what they do in their post-career life. And listen, some are built for the media world. Some want to be general managers or continue to work in hockey, whether it be in management or coaching. But I don't know. I think about Rob Blake and Sakic and those guys, and I understand you want to be the big dog, but it's just such a time-consuming and monumental task being the general manager of a hockey club. And I don't know. It's just I prefer I think the media route is maybe not as lucrative, but
Not as lucrative, but it's less stressful, to be honest with you, like doing the media stuff, because, you know, for me, I find like I'm talking about stuff that I already enjoy watching, and just doing it on a microphone and with you and with Arad and with 20 Fingers, and we entertain people's mornings, and there's a joy in that for me. And when you're doing the hockey stuff and you're in front of it every day, you know, think about the stresses that they go through on a daily and a weekly basis. Like, you think about working in the front office in Vancouver, and all of a sudden you show up to the rink and you're fired. Like, it's like, that's stressful, man.
No doubt. I mean, you talk about enjoying things that you're watching and enjoying things you're talking about. That would not apply to Matt Chatham, who will join us at 9:30, a three-time Super Bowl champion with the New England Patriots, who had an exceptional performance last night against your Buffalo Bills. So we'll talk about that with Matt Chatham when he joins us in about 15 minutes in hour 4, First Stop.